Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Joseph Lamb. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Jessica, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is deployment on a cluster WebSphere Commerce version 6 environment. Today's presenters are Eileen Kwan and Scott Gumini. Eileen is a member of the Advanced Technical Services team. Eileen specializes in configuration, customization, deployment, and performance tuning on a highly scaled WebSphere Commerce environment. She provides both remote and on-site technical assistance to customers via service engagement. Scott is a key architect on the Commerce team, and he is responsible for architecting the product installers, configuration utilities, and migration strategy. Scott is also the WebSphere Commerce compatibility champion and is responsible for ensuring that the product is compatible between releases. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Eileen and Scott.
Thank you, Joseph. Let's go to page 2, please. So this presentation is an extension from the presentations we did earlier, one on the Commerce deployment on version 5 clustered environment, which I delivered sometime last year, late last year, and also it's an extension from last week's presentation, version 6 deployment. On this part 2, today's presentation, we will highlight some of the changes in deployment on a specifically version 6 clustered environment. And as you can see from the agenda here, we will first go through an example of configuring and setting up a clustered environment. Then we'll go into some discussions on migration, migrating from a version 5 clustered environment to version 6 clustered environment. Then we'll talk about the best practices on how to deploy your customization and 6-pack and 8-part installations specifically applicable to a version 6 clustered environment. Then we'll take up some frequently asked questions such as how to configure cache monitor for each cluster member and also discuss data replication as well as payment tie availability. And finally, we'll take up some questions and answers from the audience at the end. Let's go to page 3, please. Here we start by introducing a new key concept in WAS version 6, which is called profile. It is a replacement for WAS instance and that contains a runtime configuration environment. Each profile has its own home directory, such as the WebSphere profile name, and it is on the file system along with all the configuration repositories under the WAS profile directory /config. As well, it has its own command line utilities under the WAS profile directory /binder. Each profile has its own admin console and can run different applications, and they're totally independent of each other. You can create a runtime environment either through the WAS profile command or the profile creation wizard graphical user interface, and you will be using this while you're setting up the version 6 clustered environment on some instances. Page 4, there are three types of profile types. Deployment Manager profile is available only with the Deployment Manager product. It is an equivalent WAS version 5.1 ND product. It is used to manage other profiles that are federated into it. A second type is an Application Server profile. It is available also in the Deployment Manager product, the App Server product, and as well the Express product. It has a server called Server 1 that can run applications. And the third type of profile is the user-defined custom profile. Next page, please. 5.
Just before we get started on slide 5, Eileen, just a key note here. When you create a Commerce instance, what happens is Configuration Manager will create an application server profile for you underneath the covers. So out of the box, there's a one-to-one mapping between application server profile and Commerce instance.
Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
So on this page here is a picture of a typical WebSphere Commerce highly available environment. At the top here, you have a load balancer that accepts the internet traffic, and it will distribute the request to the multiple web server tier. In here, we have two web servers, and then after that, at the application server tier, you would have multiple nodes. And then at the end, you have the database server. And then also on the same tier as the application server, you see the network deployment manager as well. Next page, please. So on page 6 here is a quick overview of the different phases we typically recommend for you when you set up a version 6 clustered environment. In phase 1, we usually configure a multi-tier, single-leg, unfederated WebSphere Commerce environment. For example, a remote web server, an application server, and a remote database server. And then in phase 2, we will expand into configuring the application server cluster, again, with one remote web server. But here in phase 2, we will join the network deployment manager, and as well as installing a second app server and federating it into the node and creating a cluster. Then in phase 3, we will configure the web server tier cluster, adding a load balancer and a second web server, and of course you can add multiple web servers into it. And then finally in phase 4, you can conduct additional configurations with some other administrative tasks such as deploying your code, configuring the cache monitor, DRS, and then, of course, before you deploy into production, you will go through lots of functional and performance tests. Page 7, please. On the next few slides, I will go into a little bit more detail on each of the phases and highlighting some of the recommendations for best practices when you are setting up this clustered environment. So in phase 1, configuration of a multi-tier unfederated environment. So typically you would install your web server once. Recommended approaches to, you can either use the WAS installer or the Commerce custom install package. So here we'll spend just a couple seconds on the custom install. It essentially is a GUI or command tool that contains some WAS install image and a few refresh packs, and as well as WAS fix packs and a number of iFixes to address some of the known issues. The purpose for having this custom-made CIP is to reduce the time of installing maintenances for WAS, as well as reducing the complexities of the Commerce install code. The CIP is available. We ship it instead of the standard WAS CD, except for the i5 OS. Then going back to installing on the web server tier, afterwards applying the fix packs, and then just going through this list here. For your app server tier, again, we recommend using the Commerce CIP to install the WAS product as well as the Commerce product and the DB database client, DB2 client. On the database server tier, you can, again, if you are creating a 32-bit instance, you can use the Commerce installer to do that. Or if you have license for a 64-bit database server, then you can use the DB2 install package. And of course, while installing the product, it is a recommendation to apply to the upgrade to the latest fix pack. Right, so upgrade to the latest fix pack before creating the instance. Then the next step is you would create a Commerce instance, publish your store, deploy the customization, and make sure this single instance of Commerce is fully functional on this single leg unfederated environment first. Page 8. For the phase 2, here we would start configuring our WebSphere application server cluster. You start by installing the network deployment manager. Again, it's very important here that you must use, you should use the Commerce custom install package, the CIP. If you use the WAS version to install the network deployment manager, you will run into issues later on after you federate. Therefore, it's very important that you use the Commerce package, in this case, to install the ND. Then after that, you can manually create the deployment manager profile. Again, apply the fixed pack. Once the deployment manager is ready, you can then federate your application server, the first node. After federation, it is good practice, again, to bring up your commerce instance and make sure it is still working properly. Then you move on to the second application server node. In that case, you don't actually need to install commerce product. All you need is the WAS product, WAS-based product, and you can create a WAS profile. And again, applying the fixed pack. After that, you can then federate the application server, the second node. Once you have multiple nodes in there, you can then create a new cluster and add the application server from your multiple nodes into the cluster as cluster members. And of course, it's very important afterwards to test your cluster thoroughly to make sure workload balancing is fully functional. Page 9, please. Now we are going to talk more in detail on the specific steps of federation and clustering and highlighting some of the best practices you should take notice as you go through these process. For federation here, adding a node to the WAS ND cell federation here is you use the addnode.sh script that's provided that's under the WAS profile bin directory. What happens underneath the cover here is federation will remove the admin console application server from server one and it moves all the configuration files into a master config repository, which is then managed by the deployment manager. In version 5, a highlight of change here is that only the original collapsed ear is moved to the ND node. If you attended my presentation from last year, you would know the background on why there was some limitations there, that Commerce only kept in sync the collapsed and the expanded ear after the initial instance creation. After that, if you update the installed app directory directly, say, publishing a store or deploying customization, unfortunately those changes were not propagated into the collapsed ear. All those have been changed and improved in version 6, as we discussed in last week's presentation, now that we keep all the collapsed and expanded ears in sync. Next, when you are federating, you need to make sure the timestamps need to match ND and the base node. Also, a good recommendation here is to increase your heap size to 500 meg when you're running the add node command. It's optional if you want to decrease it back down to the default, or you keep it at that as long as you have enough physical memory on your machine. Also, a good note is to increase your SOAP timeout value. So when you federate, when the base node sends all your configuration repository into ND, if the network speed is not very fast, you could run into SOAP timeout issues, and that's why it's recommended you increase this value. And, of course, you can decrease it later after you federate. Okay, so here then is a syntax of the add node script. You would run this as root and specify the host name for the deployment manager, the port number, the SOAP port number, 8879 by default. Minus include ask here tells the base node to send all of its applications in addition to the configuration into the ND. And also one note here, as you can see highlighted in green, is to make sure you put the minus trace string here in case you run into any issues with federation. It gives you a lot more information once you have the trace turned on that you can look into after or send a log to the support analyst for further help. Next slide here.
Yeah, and while we're switching slides, just some comments. All of these procedures are documented in the Commerce Information Center. They used to be in the installation guide. We've moved more of the complex configuration to the installation guide. So all of these things that we talked about around, you know, making sure that the timestamp, the time on the machines are close enough, and that the heap size, that's all documented in our Information Center as well.
Yes. Slide 10. Some of the post-federation steps here is running the config.ent.sh script for your instance to reconfigure the cell. It used to be called the Create Virtual Host.sh tool. It replaces it, and in addition, it has some more functionalities. One note on this is that you need to make sure that your deployment manager and node agents are both running while running the script. And afterwards, it's good to also run the wc-numroot.sh to correct the file permission issues on Unix. One recommendation also is to change the process execution ID for your node agent, your servers, and as well as your deployment manager. So you can see here we actually had the WC instance server that was old information from version 5 days, where you would have actually a separate server for commerce, running the commerce application on version 5. That is no longer the case in version 6. Now the commerce application runs directly under server 1. If you want more information and more details on how exactly to change some of these process execution owner IDs, you can go to the link that I included on this page here. Page 11 here. So here we talk about how you would prepare additional nodes that you want to add into the cell. One highlight of a difference from version 5 days is that back in version 5 days, when you install additional nodes, you need to make sure the file paths match. That is no longer required on version 6, so that's definitely an improvement. Also, for when you are installing an additional node, you don't need to install the commerce product. All you need is the WAS installation and a WAS profile created, because now the network deployment manager manages all the master configuration, and it automatically deploys this configuration and synchronizes it to all the nodes. A second note on this page also is when you are federating the additional nodes to the network deployment manager, you don't need to specify the minus include apps options, because on this new node, a second or third node, you don't have any applications created yet. You want to join this node into the cell, and then the network deployment manager will distribute whatever the existing application it has, which it actually took from the first node that you federated, and it will automatically propagate that existing application to any new nodes that now you're joining into the cell. Page 12. After you've federated all your nodes, you're now ready to create a cluster and then create cluster members for them to participate in workload balancing. You can create a new cluster from the WAS admin console that contains the original commerce application server, which is server 1 in version 6. One recommendation is when you are creating the cluster, you will see the option to check if you want to also create a replication domain along with the cluster. It is recommended that you do that at this time if you plan to use DRS, data replication service, in the future, or optionally, you can always manually create it later. Page 13. After you create the cluster, you need to create a cluster member. So you can go into the WAS admin console, and again, the details of these steps are documented in the Info Center. One recommendation here is that before you add any new cluster members, it's recommended that you make as many configuration changes as possible to the first cluster member that you created, because any additional cluster member that you want to join into the cluster will use the template from the first application server, including the JVM tuning parameters, any configuration files that it takes from the template. A change here in V6 is commerce application is actually stopped briefly due to the configuration changes to the default core group when you add a new cluster member. Unfortunately, this creates a brief downtime, and it actually is different from version 5. Back in version 5 days, you can just add new cluster member on the fly, and it would not bring down your application. In version 6, you need to consider allocating, set aside some change management time, change window, and allocate for this slight downtime. And then I included a brief output from the log that you can see the default core group here is because it's updating its view. That is why it needs to restart the application briefly. And just one note on also the core group. It's actually a new concept in version 6. A core group is a high available domain that contains a number of processes in the same cell that can directly establish this high availability relationship, creating failover support for each process. High available components can fail over from another process in the same core group, and replication can happen only among members of the same core group, and commerce by default uses the default core group. The next slide, number 14. Continuing with some of the recommendations while creating the version 6 cluster. So after creating the cluster, you now need to manually copy some of these file assets that are not distributed by WAS. In version 5 days, you need to actually copy over the entire commerce instance directory to all the nodes that are in your cell. In version 6, you now no longer need to do this. You don't actually need the commerce directory on these additional nodes to run your application. You only really just need that commerce product installation on one node, which you will need to run later to launch the update installer, to use the configuration manager. And next, you need to still copy over the static content to the web server, but now in version 6, you have the option to configure automatic plugin propagation. Some additional configurations, if you choose, you can move some of the configuration definition from a server scope to a cell scope. For example, some of the MQ definitions or data source. By default, the data source, for example, is configured at a server level, so each individual app server has a data source definition. If you know all your servers or all the servers in your cluster share the same data source definition, you can move that up a level to the cell scope or to the cluster scope if you want. You can also set up session persistence and cache replication and cache monitor, which we'll discuss a little bit in detail in the later slides. Then, of course, very important, after you set up your new cluster, you need to conduct a testing to make sure your failover works by, say, bring up the application individually from each node, from each application server, one at a time, and then also bring all of them up and hitting the each individual server, and then through the load balancer. Page 15. Next, we get into phase 3 of the configuration of web server cluster. Here, you would then repeat your installation, product installation of your web servers on multiple web servers, then set up your load balancer and test the failover at the web server tier. And then again, after that, test your failover for the application server tier. Next page, 16. Phase 4, this is the final phase of setting up your version 6 cluster. After you ensure your cluster is fully functional, there are some additional tasks that you might want to take, such as configuring the cache monitor, DRS, deploying your customization, fixed pack installation, which Scott will cover in the next few slides here. And then finally, of course, conducting sufficient testing, functional tests, as well as performance tests. Okay, so next slide, 17, I'll turn it over to Scott.
So we'll talk a little bit about migrating from a version 5 clustered environment to a version 6 clustered environment. The key thing to note here is that the migration tool will migrate you from a version 5 cluster, but the target will be standalone, non-clustered environment. So you need to re-cluster, re-federate after you migrate. So make sure that you plan for that activity, that you give yourself the opportunity to test, of course, in a clustered environment before you move into production. So on the slides, we have a URL, a link to a DeveloperWorks article that we wrote that describes the best approach or one of the approaches that you could take to migrate to a clustered environment. This article talks about how you can integrate this reclustering into your migration process and how you can reuse your existing hardware during the migration process so that you don't need to actually get new hardware to reproduce your entire cluster during the migration process. So you can use that as a guideline as you're migrating to version 6. So let's move on to the next slide, number 18. We talked a little bit last week, if you joined, about the procedure for updating the application. So I'll do a quick little review of the types of assets that you can use. In version 6, there's the fine-grained application update that was introduced. Deployment packages are either exported from your development environment, such as RAD, or they are built using some sort of build process that you have. The packages can be an entire module. You can add, delete, or update an existing module inside the application, or a partial application, just a collection of files that you want to use to update the application that can be spread across many modules, or just a single file that you want to add or replace inside the ear file. So you would take these assets and use the supported WebSphere tooling to update the application. So it's very important that you use the WebSphere tooling to update the application. If you don't use that procedure, installing a Commerce Fix Pack could potentially remove your customizations. So let's move over to slide number 19. So I'll talk a little bit about how you can reduce downtime. So the key procedure that you want to use is you want to set up a cluster, as we documented, and that's going to give you the ability to have that failover support that you need and the workload balancing amongst your hardware. So you can effectively use your hardware, but you can also have the ability to have an environment that if one of the servers goes down, the others will pick up the slack. So when you're deploying your customizations, this quite frequently forces a restart of the application. So for example, deploying changes to the EJB will cause the entire application to be restarted. In WAS 6, they introduced this feature called a rollout update. What it does is it gives you the ability to have the end user perceive the system as having zero downtime. And by doing that, it controls the procedure of updating the various nodes in your cluster. So we'll go walk through a few of these slides to kind of illustrate the process. So the first thing we need to note is that there are database updates and there are application updates. So in this chart, the two little black boxes indicate the updates. So the first thing you'll do is you'll perform the database updates. Those need to be done first. All of the code updates typically will rely on database changes. So if you have a new table, for example, you would do that first. So then we'll focus a little bit on the actual application updates themselves. So if we move to the next slide, slide number 20, what you do is you use the normal update procedures inside WebSphere Application Server, and you make sure that you select this rollout update option. So what's going to happen is all of the updates are going to be stored on the deployment manager first. And the deployment manager is going to control the activities on the various nodes so that the application looks like it was never stopped. Very important to understand that your update may change the behavior of the site. So as a customer is accessing the site and being bounced between various nodes of your environment, they may see changes in the application. So just be aware of that. As this rollout is happening, customers could be using various versions of the application during that period of time. So once the deployment manager has the changes, we can move over to slide number 21. On slide number 21, you'll see that the node in red is stopped. So what happens is, during this rollout update process, the deployment manager will shut down each node in sequence and update each node. So in this example, node 1 would be stopped, or all of the servers on node 1 would be stopped. It would transfer the application updates to node number 1, expand the changed application into that installed apps directory, and then restart the application. During this time, the two other nodes are functioning perfectly fine. Customers will see no downtime in the site. You'll have reduced capacity because one of the nodes is not taking requests, but in the end, the customer sees no downtime. We can move on to slide number 22, and that just shows the next stage in the process. So it finished updating node number 1, and it moves on to node number 2 and performs the exact same process. Expands the application, restarts the servers, and then it moves on to each node in sequence. So let's move on to slide number 23. It's sort of a summary of the process. So the goal is to have zero downtime from the customer's perspective. So the idea is that you do your database changes first. You apply the updates via the WAS tooling. It could be the console or it could be a script. And then you use this rollout update procedure where the deployment manager serializes the updates to the nodes. It will stop the servers on each node, synchronize the ear, and restart the servers. So I gave a URL for a sample tutorial that illustrates how you can do that. And there is actually a script that's provided. So a WSAdmin Jackal script is provided to show you how to do that. So it's a fairly simple example. So let's move on to slide number 24. Gets into the six-pack installation. So there are some changes here since the last release. In the last release, you'll remember that the procedure was update the product installation directory. For each instance, update each instance. And if the instance was clustered, you actually had to perform the updates on every node that's part of your cluster. Well, that's not exactly the same process in 6.0. In 6.0, you update the product installation directory, and you update each instance. But you only have to update each instance once, and the deployment manager will handle distributing the new version of the application throughout your environment for you. So make sure that you read the six-pack installation guide and understand the process. Make sure that you don't use the old process by mistake. Make sure that you launch that update installer from a single node, from that node where you have Commerce installed. So if you remember in Eileen's steps that she documented that you only have to install Commerce on that first node and you don't need to install it on the others. If you follow that procedure, you would never ever actually be able to use the update installer on these other nodes. You would only be able to use it on that node where Commerce is installed. Here's an example of how to use this script. We support both command line invocation and graphical invocation of this tool. Make sure that you back up before you do the fixed pack installation. You want to make sure that you're playing it safe. It is your production environment. Your business does rely on this site, so make sure that you're performing backup. And make sure that you've actually tested your backup and restoration procedure to make sure that it works. Make sure that you update every Commerce instance. So remember, you only have to do the update once per instance and for every payment manager instance as well. And as I mentioned earlier, the deployment manager will distribute the contents throughout the environment for you, so you only need to do that once. You also have the option of doing the update database manually. So the installer will prompt you, do you want to do database updates, yes or no? So if you want your DBA to do those database updates, then you can instruct them how to do that, and that can be invoked from command line as well. Once all of the changes have been made, we don't actually restart your application for you. We leave it in a stop state so that you can actually test the application and ensure that it works before bringing it back into production. So there is some downtime when you install Commerce Fix Pack, so plan for that accordingly. Let's move on to slide number 25 then. And I think that's Eileen.
Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
Now we get into some of the common post-clustering tasks, such as setting up the cache monitor for each cluster member and configuring DRS. We'll go right along to page 26. When you configure the cache monitor for each cluster member, I documented some of the detailed steps in these slides to ensure that you are looking up the correct port number for each cluster member. It's very important that you access the cache monitor for each individual cluster member, so you're monitoring the cache statistics for each individual app server. So here is a screenshot of how you would look up a secure port number for one WebSphere Commerce server. In this case, you go to the app server, then you select your application server and you look up the web container transport chain, and you will see a list of the ports, and make sure you pick a port that is both enabled as well as SSL enabled. So some of these ports might be disabled by default. Make sure if you want to use that particular port that you it is enabled. Next, on page 27 here, again, here is a larger screenshot highlighting the locations where you can look at the whether the port is enabled and SSL enabled. Typically, you can look for the WC inbound admin secure port or the WC inbound default secure port. Next slide, 28. After you've picked your port for the each individual cluster member, you can go on to create a new virtual host called Cache Monitor, for example. Once you create the virtual host, you can create the host alias that contains the specific port number that you selected from the earlier step for the each individual app server. Very important note here is that you need to make sure the combination of the host name and the port number that make up the virtual host definition is unique, that it doesn't, it's not duplicating any other virtual host entries. Otherwise, your plugin, when it's routing the traffic to the each individual virtual host, it'll get confused and then you're going to have some 404 errors. Page 29. Once you have the virtual host configured, you can go on to installing the Cache Monitor application. So here I list out the specific screens and steps that you can take to do that. An important note here is that when you are mapping the DynaCache dynamic cache monitor module, if you're in a clustered environment, it's very important that you map it to the entire cluster. Page 30 is a screenshot showing you how you can select this option. Make sure you highlight either the individual app server or the entire cluster. Page 31, then while you're installing the cache monitor, it's going to prompt you to map the virtual host for the web module. Make sure you pick the new virtual host that you just created from earlier. Then after this, you save everything to the master configuration. Page 32. After this, you can then regenerate your plugin, and either you can manually copy the plugin to your remote web server, or if you have automatic propagation set up, it'll take care of that for you. Now you're ready to access your cache monitor. An example here of a URL for accessing the cache monitor through the inbound admin secure port, for example, the default 9044, or the default secure port 9444. And on the next slide, 33 here, we're showing you an example of if you are in a clustered environment, you would set up the cache monitor URL that you can access through two different URLs. On node 1, you have a different port number, and then on node 2, or cluster member 2, you would have a different URL. Page 34. Here we are going to talk about data replication. It is a very common task when you are dealing with a multi-node environment, such as a clustered environment here. So recall on version 5 of WAS, there was a known performance issue with the replicator in the same Commerce JVM that is creating performance overhead and in many cases under stress causing out-of-memory issues. In order to address that, we came up with some instructions in a techno documented here to separate the replicator into its own JVM to free up additional JVM spaces. Now on version 6, this replicator technology no longer exists. The DRS actually relies on High Availability Manager to provide for this messaging. You can follow the WAS Info Center to set up the replication domain and the cache replication. Each DRS instance uses a group membership function of the HA manager to keep informed of whether each instance is up within the same core group. There are still some performance issues that could occur under a heavily stressed situation, and therefore WAS published some tuning recommendations that you can find from this link here. And the one very important note is to always upgrade to the latest WAS fix pack. Next page here, going into a little bit of a detail of the possibility of that possible performance issue you could experience with DRS. if you're under a stress situation when you have many, many DRS messages being generated from your cache entry and they are all shared across your cluster members, you could have a congestion exception thrown by the DRS to indicate that this pipeline that's delivering these messages between your cluster members is getting full. What DRS tries to do is it'll attempt to send the data again, but if this congestion is not resolved, you're going to keep getting these exceptions. Some recommendations that is from WAS is that you can actually increase some of the tuning parameters inside the DRS. And on page 36, we talk about some of them. For example, again, number one, go to the latest WAS fix pack, very important. Then next, you can use a new feature that's included in WAS 602.17 and later to control the size of your DRS messages. You can also increase the default thread pool size that handles these replications. The recommendation from WAS is to increase it to, from 10 to 50. An instruction here is included in this link. And also another recommendation is to increase the transport buffer from the default, again, 10 to 50. Again, I'd like to stress that any type of performance tuning is really a balancing act. There are many processes and objects all utilizing the same JVM. You should thoroughly test for your unique scenario before you launch, and these recommendations are a guideline to serve as a starting point. For your each individual environment, you may find it necessary to change one or more of these settings in order to achieve the best stability and performance for your individual system. Page 37 here, a commonly asked question is, what are the available replication policies that you have? There are four major types here. The first one is not shared, meaning that when the cache entries are generated, they are not going to be distributed across the cluster. The next one is the shared push policy, which means when you generate the cache entry, it'll from one JVM, it'll be automatically distributed to all the cluster members that are participating and that belong to the same core group. And by the way, the shared push is a recommendation from Commerce, but again, you need to thoroughly test all of these before launching. The next couple of options here are available to you. For example, the shared pull means when the cache entry is generated from one JVM, it first creates a cache ID that will be broadcasted to all the cluster members in the cluster. Then if another cluster member received the same request for the cache object, it does not have it in its own JVM, but it notices that another JVM, another cluster member has this particular cache entry, it'll then pull that cache entry from that particular cluster member. From our experience in version 5 especially, is we found that this particular method actually creates some overhead as well, and just all these additional logic is not really worth it when it's a kind of situation, and that is why. And of course, the shared push and pull is a combination of the push method and then the pull method of sharing the cache entry and the cache IDs. That is why Commerce Performance Team generally recommends the shared push. On page 38, another common question that comes up is the high availability of Payment Manager. So on the version 5 days, unfortunately, the old Payment Manager cannot be clustered. But starting with version 6, the new payment is part of the Commerce application. And because the Commerce application can be clustered, and therefore the new payment can also be clustered. A migration path from the old payment manager to the new payment manager is possible. So you can look into that if you'd like. Slide 39 here is a chart that has a link to a number of sites that will provide valuable online resources for the WebSphere product. Developer Works offers in-depth technical information. The event link on support pages point you to the webcast and conference information. You can visit the WebSphere.org for user group information and more product info. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up and running, up the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online, and the My Support link on all product support pages let you sign up for weekly email updates for product of interest to you. And at this point, I'd like to turn it back to our moderator, Joseph.
Thank you, Eileen and Scott, for a great presentation. At this point, Jessica, we would like to open the lines for questions.
And we have a question from Giancarlo Martinez.
Hi, this is Giancarlo. Scott, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the migration when you go from a cluster V5 to a V6, and you mentioned the Jackal script. Is that going to be converted to a Jython since Jackal support is, I think, sunsetting soon?
Okay, so I think there were two questions. Let's talk about the Jackal thing. We realize that Jackal has been deprecated, I think, in WAS 6.1. So my team has more skills in Jackal than in Jython, but we are redoing some of the deployment documentation, so we'll take that into consideration and probably provide the examples in Jython instead.
Okay.
No definite plans on changing any existing examples that we have.
But the Jackals could be used, I guess, as a guide for... I mean, what's the real purpose of the scripts again? I kind of missed that in the presentation.
So this script that I mentioned was an example on how to do an update with the admin app object and do a rollout update.
Okay.
So it kind of does things like disable node synchronization just to make sure that something doesn't accidentally synchronize. It does the update, it saves the configuration, and then it calls the rollout update function. Those should be mapped very closely to Jython. So it shouldn't be a big problem to convert something like that to Jython.
Okay, thank you.
And then the second question was an overview on the migration procedure from a cluster to a cluster.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Eileen can touch on that one.
On migration from a version 5 to a version 6 clustered environment, I think as Scott mentioned from the presentation, the key is that you migrate a single leg environment first, which is unfederated. You can utilize our migration scripts to migrate your database first and then migrate your application or the WAS instance from version 5 to version 6. And once you have this new version 6 instance functional, you need to go through the process that we described in this presentation and also documented in the Info Center to create your new version 6 cluster.
Right. Okay, thank you.
That could be part of your sort of test activities. And then the idea is that you want to build your cluster as soon as you can during the migration process so that you can start testing it out during your test phase. And then you're going to use this sort of production migration phase where you need to re-migrate the database. So what you would do is when you're ready to switch over, you would just redo your database migration. So you'd have a little bit of downtime to do that database migration. But then the idea is that your cluster is already there and ready to go. So you just migrate that database, flip the switch, and you're using your new environment because you've done a lot of preparation before that period of downtime. Okay.
And there are no further questions. I'd like to turn the conference back over to you, Mr. Lam, for any additional or closing remarks.
At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Eileen and Scott, for presenting today.
Thank you.